Before we start, I'd like to dedicate the shiur this morning to the memory of one of our regulars for several years, Howard Sherby, Zichron Lebracha, dedication by Carol, who's here every single week, and our family, the Sherby family. Howard would always sit pretty much close to my parents, this area of the shiur, and how is it that Howard and my father, Ashkenim, in Eretz Achayim. I could just tell you that it may sound a little bit bad humor, but my mother, she should be well. When they came in Aliyah in 93 and they gave up their plots in America to purchase in Eretz Achayim, in the Young Israel, I think it was the Young Israel section. So my mother said, I like the view and I know half the neighbors. Never. It's true. Boy, is it true. And, you know, when I and right across the street is the YU plot, and you know, half my teachers are there, you know, from YU. So, Kacha Zem V'chaim, Eretz HaChaim. This morning, yeah, Baksha.
Sorry to interrupt right at the beginning. I'm learning Kahati, Pirkei Avos, and he mentions a sefer by the Rambam I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Something called Ma'ora, it sounds like it's something to deal with Midot and
a book that the Rambam himself wrote?
Yeah, Ma'era, Ma'ora, something with Or.
There were those who refer to the Parish HaMishnah as Sefer HaMa'or. So it's possible that he used it. It's very rare that Kaki would use that, because he'll just say Parish HaMishnah. But the Rambam himself, it's not even the Rambam, but others after the Rambam who referred to the Rambam's Parish HaMishnah did refer to it as Sefer HaMa'or, the Illuminator.
Right.
The Illuminator. So it could be that's what he is. Could be he's referring to one of the Achrayim, Keren Oira, which is something else completely. That's like a 17th,
18th.
Oh, so it could be Sefer Mor. Sefer Mor was a nickname of the Parish Commissioner.
Okay.
Makes sense if it's in the Masechet Avot. Okay. Next week, first of all, let's just make a commercial announcement. Today's really going to be the finale share for this season for myself. We're taking a little bit of a summer break. I'm going to be out of the country next to Wednesdays, and then it's the day after Shabbat, and then we have Chufsha Mishpachtit. Bekitza, keep your eyes open for the mid to end of August, when we will resume Shirim. In the interim, there will be somebody filling the slot at 9 o'clock. The OU Center likes to... Yeah, it's on. Better?
Yes.
Okay.
What?
Today is the last Shir that I've been giving for the season. We'll have a little bit of a break. There will be some substitute Shirim during the interim. I think each week in Torah Tidbits will spill out who's giving what, and mid to end of August there'll be an announcement in the Torah Tidbits when we resume our Shurim. Next week on Thursday night will be the 7th Yahrzeit of the great Rosh Yeshiva from Yeshiva Tar Etzion, Rav Yehuda Amital, Zichrono Levracha. Many of us are familiar with the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I can tell you that the greatness of Rav Mital was not known to me before I came to study in the yeshiva in 1972. A year before, I had an acquaintance who was studying at the Gush, the year 71, 72, Tavshin Lamed Bet, and I wrote him how things were. I asked him how things were in the yeshiva, because it was Rav Lichtenstein's first year in the yeshiva. I had heard shiurim from him at YU the year before, even. So I knew who Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was, and that was the drawing card. But I heard that there was another co-Rosh Yeshiva, and this other fellow writes to me, and he says, look, I'm Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and I don't have to tell you, but I'm going to write to you a little bit about the co-Rosh Yeshiva, why this is a good reason why you want to study in Keren Biavna, because it was either Keren Biavna or Yeshivat Har Etzion at the time. Yeshivat HaKotel had just opened up, and the clincher, to a certain degree, was that my brother went to Keren Biavna, so that's why I wasn't going there. That's not true. It's true. But I wanted to know more about the yeshiva in Har Etzion, and I really just fell in love with this Rav Mital and became very close to him throughout the years. He passed away 7 years ago, and obviously I would have attended his Levaya, but I was in Poland that week. And I ended up hearing about it when I was in Auschwitz. And Rav Amital went through, his family perished in Auschwitz. He himself saw the Malchamava several times around during the days of the Shoah. And Bechazdei Hashem, he survived. He was a sole survivor from his family. And he became an illustrious personality here in Eretz Yisrael. And I said a hesped for him right then and there in Auschwitz. And was my family here brought it to the Amital's attention at the Shiva. And they were very touched. It was like almost an appropriate place to close the circle. And therefore, this coming Shabbat at my shul, where I give my normal shiur between Mincha Maariv, the announced topic is going to be 7 years without Rav Amital. What has happened since? And what are we missing? So I started opening up some, you know, my books that I have on this on Rav Amital. And the first sefer that I opened up was a halachic sefer that was published shortly before the end of his life, called Resisei Tal. It's an anthology of some of his crackerjack shiurim that he gave at the yeshiva. And I looked at the table of contents, and the second shiur is exactly the topic that I prepared to talk about today. So it became an opportunity to expand some of the things I wanted to say about riding along with Bilam, which was last week's parsha, but nevertheless, Torah is eternal, and to add some of the comments that Rav Amital said, and by this way, also honoring his memory. Chazal say that with Talmidei Chachamim, Siftotehem Dovavot Bekever, if you repeat the Divrei Torah that you studied by him, so as if to say his lips are still moving in the grave, that is to say the Torah lives on. So, Pesach Shabbat, we read the Pasuk in the words of Bilam about Am Yisrael, Kara Shachav Ka'ari, Uchlavi Mi Yikimenu, describing Am Yisrael in terms of a lioness and a lion, with that strength and courage. When they lie down, they have no problems because they know that nobody's going to attack them. And when they get up, they're fearless, and they can deal with their surroundings. And that's why Am Yisrael is compared to an Ari and a Lavi. And it says, "Bevarachecha baruch uvarachecha aruv." Those who bless us will also be blessed, and those who curse us will be cursed. I think there've been more those who cursed us than those who blessed us. And take a look at the world. Take a look at the world. But this is almost a restatement of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu back in Parshat Lech Lecha. V'avarcha mevarchecha u'mekalelecha ha'or. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bless those who bless you, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will curse those who curse you. Because, Chazal say, blessing Am Yisrael is blessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it personally. And so too with the Klalah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it personally. So it has a rebound effect on the person who delivered whatever the goods were, bracha or a klala. Now on this pasuk, there is a very interesting statement in Chazal found in Masechet Brachot, in source number 2, Amar Rababahu bar Zutrati, Amar Rav Yehuda bar Zvida. Rababahu, the son of Zutrati, said in the name of Rav Yehuda, the son of Zvida, Bikshu likboa parshat balak bikriyat shma. There was a suggestion that as we say Kriyat Shema every morning and evening, so Kriyat Shema contains three parshiot, as we all know, Parsha of Shema, Vayam Shemoah, and Vayomer. But they wanted to add on a fourth parsha, and that was Parshat Balak. Now, not the entire Parshat Balak, 104 psukim, but the psukim that Bilam said about Klal Yisrael. Now, even though it came from the mouth of Bilam, but nevertheless, these were the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah says that Bilam's not going to manufacture anything. He told Balak, whatever God puts in my mouth, oto adaber. That's what I'm going to tell you. For good or for bad, you know. So you're at a risk. You cannot blame or accuse Bilam of gnevat da'at, that the Kilu was deceptive. He wasn't deceptive at all. He laid it on the table. He said, look, you're hiring me to curse Am Yisrael. I'm going to try my best to get some divine inspiration. But whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu puts in my mouth, that's what's coming out. So take it or leave it, you know. And the first time, the second time, third time, and at the third time, Balak said, Moichel Toifus, you know, like, then well, forget it. You already, I hired you to curse Bnei Yisrael, and you blessed them three times. And his reaction was, Vus vilste for me, what do you want from me? I told you up front, I told you this was going to happen. And you have the most beautiful psukim in the entire Torah coming out of Bilam's mouth. Matovu alecha Yaakov, mishkenotecha Yisrael. So the Gemara says that there was a suggestion that these psukim are not just psukim of bracha, but psukim of identification of Am Yisrael and spelling out the destiny of Am Yisrael. It foretells so much about where we are going, what direction we're taking. And it would make sense that it would be part and parcel of the Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim status that we do when we say Kriyat Shema, accepting a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because we're accepting the difficult destiny of Am Yisrael, no less than the good things. Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkenotecha Yisrael. The Ramban points out in Sefer Breshit and Parshat Vayechi that the interchange of the two names Yaakov and Yisrael is very, very instructive, because Avraham Avinu had a name change also, from Avram to Avraham. But no longer is the name Avram in use. It's been put out the pasture. And now it's only Avraham. Whereas with regard to Yaakov and Yisrael, both names are constantly used interchangeably. So in Tanakh, and the question is why? Even though the Torah says in Parashat Vayishlach, Lo yamer od Yaakov ki im Yisrael. No longer will be Yaakov, will be Yisrael. But it's not true in a sense. We still use Yaakov. The Torah uses Yaakov, and the Nevi'im use Yaakov all the time. So Ramban says that Am Yisrael has a two-track history. Track one is Galut, and track two is Geula. And track one, Galut, means when Am Yisrael has not achieved a full redemptive stage. There could be partial redemption, so it could be a little Yaakov and Yisrael mixed together, but Yaakov by definition means Ba'akev Esav, hanging on to the heel of Esav, where he's trodden on by the foot of Esav. He's dragged by an Esav. And Esav comes in different flavors and sizes and colors. But this is the Amaleki of every generation. This is the Yaakov status. Whereas Yisrael is where Am Yisrael overcomes. Ki sarita im Elokim im Anashim batuchal. The ability to stand up and stand for what we stand for and so on. And to be in charge, to be in control of our own destiny. That's Yisrael. So those psukim in Parshat Vayechi that speak about Yaakov Avinu as Yaakov, he's talking about Yaakov Avinu in Galut. And whenever Yaakov Avinu is referred to as Yisrael, this is Am Yisrael in a Geula stage. I mean, I think it was very, very prophetic on Ben-Gurion's part that the state was called Israel, Yisrael, because he really put his finger on the shame, the name Yisrael, as it's to be understood, the way the Ramban understood it. And this is the way we have to understand all the psukim of Parshat Balak, where you have the Yaakov Yisrael interchange throughout. So you have Matovu O'alecha Yaakov, Mishkenotecha Yisrael. So Gemara says, from the brachot of Bil'am, you can figure out, you can deduce, or it's implicit, what he actually had in mind, what he wanted to do. He wanted to curse Am Yisrael that they should not have any Bate Knesset or Bate Midrash. And what did he say? Matovu O'alecha Yaakov. Take a look how nice the Bate Knesset and Bate Midrash are. And Bilam wanted to say that God would never rest his Shekhinah, his resting place, upon Am Yisrael. But what did he say? Mishkenotecha Yisrael. The resting place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be amongst Am Yisrael. So you take the Yaakov in Yisrael. So Yaakov, talking about Beit Knesset, Beit Midrash, in terms of an ohel. Ohel means temporary lodging. Right? Ohel is a temporary lodging. That, by definition, that's why the Mishkan in the Midbar, the desert, was called Ohel Moed. The Beit HaMikdash was never called Ohel Moed. It's never a tent. But the Mishkan in the desert was portable, was collapsible, and so on, and could rebuild it. It was Legos, and this was it was like Legos, and this was Ohel. It was Ohel Moed. We live in a neighborhood in Katamon where every other shul is in Ohel. So there's all Nechama and all Rivka and all Aaron or Moshe or Yosef. All these Ohelim. So we're Yoshvei Ohelim in our neighborhood. But the point is, Ohel, by definition, means temporary. And we pointed out more than once, in the name of Rav Kook, that the reason that the Gemara gives two different references of psukim to Bate Knesset, Bate Midrash, because some refer to Chutz La'aretz and some refer to Eretz Yisrael. Those in Chutz La'aretz clearly are built on condition that there's a Jewish community that still resides there. If there would be no Jewish community residing there, the building loses or forfeits its Kedusha. So if you go to countries, wherever it may be, whether it's Poland or anywhere else, and you go to a structure that once upon a time was a shul, but there are no Jews living there, so there's no Kedusha. Now, you want to daven mincha there for nostalgia purposes, that's okay. But it's not a big difference davening mincha there, davening right on the street in Lublin. But the fact is, the building has lost its Kedusha. As opposed to Eretz Yisrael, even if the structure has been destroyed, demolished, but you're familiar with the area that was Beit Knesset, so it still has the Kedusha of a Beit Knesset, because it's Eretz Yisrael. Because here there's Shechina, and Shechina never left Eretz Yisrael. So if you go to Masada, and you're looking for a nice place to daven mincha, so you go to the place where the archaeologist decided this was a synagogue, this was a Beit Knesset. And whether it's in Gamla, or whether it's in other places near Beit Shan, all kinds of archaeological sites where they found mosaics on the ground, and they know it's a shul, it was a shul, and so on. So these are places that still have a kedusha. I don't know if I mentioned it here once, but maybe more than once even. But stop me if I said it last week. But I remember in the army, you're not supposed to divulge, where you're doing, what you're doing. That's called bitachon sadeh. So once my son Itani, who was an officer in the paratroop at the time, so he said that. By the way, he came home safely. Everybody's he's okay, back home. Oh yeah, he's home. Bobashem. He's flying high. Yeah, but those days he was a paratrooper, which means he said he only took off and didn't land. I said, you did land, but not on wheels. You landed. So he wanted to let me know that he was going into Gaza with his group. But you're not supposed to say that over the phone, right? So he asked me, he says, Abi, says, where is that old shul that they excavated in the city of Gaza where there's a mosaic? I said, well, what do you need to know? I said, well, I might be davening mincha there tomorrow. Oh, okay. Call me tomorrow and tell me how it went. How was mincha? Were you the chazan? I mean, that was a little bit of a clue just to let me know where he was going. That's it. I shouldn't have said that anyway. But the Gemara says that these psukim of Parshat Parshat Balak was so important to the identity of Am Yisrael and the destiny of Am Yisrael that we should include it in our daily recitation of Shema in the morning and the evening. So why was it not accepted? A wonderful idea. So Gemara says at the end of source number 2, Mishum Torah Hatzibur, because Chazal were concerned that in the morning people are in a rush and they don't have time. It's a bother. We used a lot of times the Aramaic Ketircha de Tzibura, but Torah Hatzibur means it's a bother. It's a burden on the Tzibur. And there are many things that the halakha kicks in because of Torah Hatzibur, which teaches us an ethical lesson that we should be concerned about not wasting people's time, especially if it's the time of the community. It's one of the reasons why if you have a day we take out 2 Sifrei Torah, so the question is, why don't you just use the same one Sefer and just do a little Glila, and you'll get there, and so on. And the answer is Torah Hatzibur. It's time-consuming to do that, but if you just put down another sefer and you hope that the gabbai before Shabbos for Yom Tov rolled it to the proper place, so which sometimes doesn't happen, all of a sudden Shabbos Rosh Chodesh and all of a sudden you need the second sefer in Pinchas and by accident they took out the sefer Torah from Chosin Bereshis, so you have to start rolling from Bereshis to Pinchas. Could have might as well used the first sefer already for the same price, but all right, Torah Hatzibur. So this is the reason that the parsha was not included. But the fact that it was not included does not mean that we shouldn't seek out the reason why it should have been included. And that's important. And to this end, we're going to try to discuss. I mentioned that the parsha also talks not only about Jewish identity, but also talks about the destiny of Am Yisrael. It talks about Acharit HaYamim, the end of days. When a non-Jew comes to apply, if you may, for conversion, so the Rambam says the first thing you do is you sit him down and give him a history lesson and tell him how difficult it is to be a Jew how difficult it was and how difficult it is. And if at the end he says, Afal Pichain, nevertheless, I still want to be part of this, then you know you're talking about somebody serious and you move on to the details of Torah and Mitzvot. But first he has to pass the history test. He's not prepared to engage in the destiny of Am Yisrael, there's no use going on further. And the Rav used to prove this from the four-word declaration of Rut, from where you learn the essence of conversion. She said four words, Amech Ami Velokayech Elokai. First she says, your nation, talking to Naomi, her mother-in-law, your nation is my nation, your God is my God. Your nation is my nation means she's connecting to the nation. You have to connect to the nation first. If you cannot connect to the nation, become part and parcel of what Am Yisrael is all about, don't bother. Don't bother. But then it goes beyond that. It goes beyond nationalism. It has to do with theology. You accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu on all the levels that we accept Him. So Parshat Balak very much speaks about the Amech Ami factor of connecting to Am Yisrael, and therefore there was good reason to suggest that these psukim should be a part of the syllabus of Kriyat Shema on a daily basis. Now in source number 3, the author of the Torah Tmima, who's Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein, his father is the famous author of the Aruch HaShulchan, not to be confused with the Shulchan Aruch. The Aruch HaShulchan was written in the 19th century. He was a Rav in Navardak. Navardak is a famous Musar town, but he was Rav Epstein, Michal Levi Epstein was the Rav there. And he dies in the late 19th century. Outstanding, outstanding Posek Halacha. And his son, Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein, was not a Rav, not a Rosh Yeshiva. He was a bank teller. He was a bank teller, but apparently he was a pretty big Talmud Chacham in his own right, and he writes a sefer called the Torah Tmima, which many people buy today as a set, which is basically an anthology of statements of Chazal throughout the world of Gemara, Babli, Yerushalmi, and Medrash, and his own comments on what the connection of these Mamarei Chazal are with the Pasuk itself. And that's why he calls the book Torah Tmima, the complete Torah. So you're not just reading the Pesukim, but you're getting the Torah Shel Peh that's relevant to each particular Pasuk. There's another famous bank teller who goes big, and you just mentioned before, Pinchas Kahati. Pinchas Kahati, I mean, Ein Bayit Asha Ein Sham Kahati. There's no house without a Kahati. Soon there's going to be no smartphone without a Kahati. I have the whole Kahati. You can download it for free, and no big deal. So you know, if you're stuck in on a bus in a traffic jam, you can make a see him on Shas, and no excuse rule. So Pinchas Kahati worked on Bank Rehov Ben Yehuda here in Bank Mizrahi, and before a computer age, and he would stempel the checks when you would deposit a check. Remember, you used to do those things, bring the check deposit slip, and everything gets stempled. That's what he did all day, and then between Mincha Maariv, he went across the street to the Echa Shlomo and gave the Mishnah Shir for Balabatim between Mincha Maariv for 30 years. And he made notes for himself, so he should give a decent shir. After 30 years, the notes became the Pinchas Kahati Mishnayos. He pushed published his notes. And outstanding, outstanding. Yeah. It says, Hakol talui b'mazal afilu sefer Torah shebehechal. Everything is a mazal, even the sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh. You have 6 sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh. One's for Shabbos, one's for weekday, one's for Rosh Kodesh. One's for fast days, and 2 are for dancing for Simchas Torah. Hey, my gosh, the sefer Torah was written. That's all I do with it, dance with it on Simchas Torah. Hakol talui b'mazal. It's a mazal. Okay. So Torah Tmimah, source number 3 says, Didami, it's compared to B'shoch Kuchav Kumecha. Take a look again at source number 1. Kara Shahav Ke'ari. The Am Yisrael will crouch Shahav like a lion. Ukelavi, and like the lioness, Mi Kimenu. Who can stand up to the Lavi? So you have both the word Shochev, lying, and Kima, getting up, which reflects upon Ubishokbecha Ufkumecha, that Shema is supposed to be read when you're lying down, or in the time of lying down and the time of getting up. Shakadosh Baruch Hu Shomrenu, I'm back to source number 3. Kadosh Baruch Hu, God guards us Bishachvenu Ufkumenu, when we're lying down and sleeping and unconscious, and when we're getting up, Lishkav Shlevim Ushketim Ka'ari Ukelavi, that we should be able to lie down quietly, comfortably, like a lion and a lioness, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu is protecting us. Okay, so this is it just a technical connection that the author of the Torah Tmima discovers that take a look, is this the reason that they figured we should read, you know, about 25 psukim extra in Kriyat Shema every single morning and evening? So it's got to go a little beyond that. This is like a technical connection. It's almost like when you sit and try to think out, why is this section of the Nevi'im selected as the Haftarah? Ah, because there's a phrase that matches. Okay, that's fine. A phrase that matches the Parshat HaShavua. But it usually goes way beyond that. There's usually a thematic connection between the entire chapter of the Navi and that which we read in the Parshat HaShavua. So we're going to try to expand on this. Source number four, the reason that we've gathered it here today, is Sefer Mitzvot, right? Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam. Mitzvah number 10. It's pretty much on top of the list of the 248 positive mitzvot. HaMitzvah Asirit, the 10th mitzvah, he Shetzivanu Liko Kriyat Shema B'chol Yom. We should read Shema every day, Arvit V'Shacharit, the evening and the morning. V'hu Amro Yitaleh, and this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'dibart Abam, and so on, V'shiftecha V'itecha, and so on, U'v'shopecha U'v'komecha. Fine. So we have the mitzvah. Author of Sefer Chinuch, in source number 5, who bases himself on the mitzvah listing of the Rambam, he says, "Va'avar al ze v'lo kara kriyat shma b'chol yom v'chol laila bizmana shekavu l'chachamim." And a person who violates this mitzvah and does not read Shema in the morning and night in its proper time, as our Chazal established, bitel mitzvah taseh, has abandoned a positive mitzvah. V'haramban zal, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, mana b'cheshbon ha-mitzvot kriyat shma b'yom mitzvah achat u'balaila mitzvah acheret. Lefi shezmana shazu lo zmana shazu vezu eina me'akevet zu. Ramban, in his listing of 613, gobbles up two spaces for Kriyat Shema. One is the mitzvah to read Shema in the morning, and one is the mitzvah to read Kriyat Shema at night. That's the same reading. So why does he use up two spaces? The Rambam only uses up one space. So Sefer Chinuch explains, and this is the Ramban's thinking on this, because it's different time framework, and one does not impede the other, which means Ramban is suggesting that if you view it as one mitzvah, like the Rambam does, and let's assume, and we know that the day begins at night, Vayerev Vayivoker Yom Echad, right? The halachic day begins at night, and let's assume for whatever reason you didn't read Kriyat Shema at night. So now you might have a suggestion that don't bother reading Kriyat Shema in the morning, because Kriyat Shema in the morning might just be part two of one mitzvah. And if you didn't do part one, there's no sense doing part two. You're not going to get a half a mitzvah. There's no such thing as a half a mitzvah. Either you did the mitzvah or you didn't do the mitzvah. But this mitzvah comes in two parts. So you have to do part one, you have to do part two. And if you didn't do part two, forget it. You know, see you tomorrow night and you try again. That's all. But the Ramban says, no, the two parts do not interfere with each other. Which means if for whatever reason I did not read Shema at night, of course I have to read it in the morning, because it's a different mitzvah. But the Ramban says it's a different mitzvah because of this halakha that one does not interfere with the other. As a principle, one does not interfere with the other. That's an indication that it's a different mitzvah. And if the time factor, he's also saying the time factor is different, that also shows that it's an independent mitzvah. The question is, would the Rambam disagree and say, indeed, if I didn't say it at night, I forget about saying it in the morning? We're going to find out in a second. The Rambam doesn't agree with that. The Rambam also says that if you didn't do it at night, you still do it in the morning. What the Rambam believes is you have two opportunities or two obligations to read Kriyat Shema within a 24-hour cycle. And if you didn't do one, you certainly can do the other. You certainly have to do the other. So, okay. So, but it's not that the night and the morning are hyphenated. That if you didn't do the night one, you don't do the day one because it has no value. According to the Rambam, it's a one mitzvah that's carried out twice. No different. The Rambam take, for example, sitting in the sukkah. So Torah says, Basukot teshvu shivat yamim. That's one mitzvah in the scheme of the 613. One mitzvah. Whether you sit in the sukkah on day one or day three or day five, it's the same mitzvah. The Rambam doesn't say that there's a mitzvah to sit on the sukkah on the first day. There's a mitzvah to sit on the sukkah on the second day. Then you're going to gobble up seven spaces already for just the mitzvah of eating in the sukkah, which you don't. It's only one mitzvah. So too, the Rambam sees there's a mitzvah to read Shema twice a day. It's okay, so if somebody didn't sit in the sukkah on the fourth day, but you sit on the fifth day, you still get a mitzvah. The same mitzvah, Basukot Teshvu, Shabbat Yamim. And so too, according to the Rambam, if you only read Kriyat Shema in the morning and for whatever reason didn't read it at night, you still get the mitzvah of reading Kriyat Shema. Because it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah act, independent of whether you did it the night before or not. So the Ramban's case that Lefisha Zmanashal Zu, Loz Manashal Zu, Vize Eina Me'akebetzu, is a little bit weak. Because that's because the Rambam agrees with that, that the night one doesn't interfere with the morning one, and yet he still keeps it as one mitzvah and not as two mitzvot. Yeah.
When the Rambam used the idea that if you miss Ma'ariv, Shmon Esrei, you repeat the next day, so why don't he use this as his criteria?
Yeah, fair. So this is one of the details that Rambam Mital deals with in the article. One of the details. So. Jerry's jumping the gun here, that there are many ramifications to this whole discussion as to whether Kriyat Shema is listed as one mitzvah, two mitzvot in the listing of the 613. And one of the discussion pieces is very much this point. Say it again.
Why doesn't he use the idea of Shmon Esrei?
Right. The Tashlumin. So we know that in the fourth parak of Masechet Brachot, the parak of Tfilat HaShachar, the Gemara gives us this option of a makeup of a Shmon Esrei, which means if for whatever reason a person accidentally, for whatever reason, did not daven Shachris, so you can make up the Shmon Esrei by Mincha in the next available time framework of Tefillah. You got a one-shot deal to make it up, which means is you just say another Shmon Esrei after the Shmon Esrei of Mincha. So you daven the Mincha Shmon Esrei in its proper time, and then immediately afterwards you just say another Shmon Esrei, and the second one counts as the makeup for the Shacharit in the morning. If you forgot Mincha, you can do it for Ma'ariv. If you forgot Ma'ariv, you can do it for Shacharis. That's called Tashlumin. So there the Gemara actually says that for Kriyat Shema it doesn't work, because it's mi'uvat she'ena yechol litkom. It's a pasuk in Kohelet, which means there are certain things that are irrevocable. Can't make it up. And what are the things that are irrevocable? Avar zmano batel korbano. If the time framework passed, so it's gone. It's finished. That's all. So Kriyat Shema carries with it, in the Oraita, in a biblical sense, a defined time framework. Bishoch b'cha, there's a nighttime. Ufkumecha, there's a daytime. You miss the nighttime, Litraot, to your next Gilgul, you know, like, we see it tomorrow night, you know, but you're not going to have this Ma'ariv, Kriyat Shema any longer. It's gone and forgotten. But Tefillah does not carry with it a time framework on a biblical level. It's only the Chachamim that installed a luach, a calendar schedule for Shachar, Mincha, Ma'ariv. But from a biblical point of view, it is timeless. And that's why the Rambam defines Tefillah as a mitzvah asay shelo hazman grama, non-time-bound mitzvah, which obligates women. The reason that women are obligated in Tefillah, according to the Rambam, is because it's a mitzvah asay shelo hazman grama. So even though the Chachamim came along and did stick on a time framework, the question is, does this impact on the halakha of mitzvah asay shazman grama, yes or no? So there are some poskim who say that what the Rambam had in mind was that a woman has to daven at least once a day, because that was the biblical framework. And the biblical framework was once a day, whenever you feel like. But then came along Chazal and said, you know, not whenever you feel like, but there's Shacharit, there's Mincha, there's Ma'ariv. So most of the poskim say that a woman should take upon herself at least one tefillah a day. The Mishnah Berurah comes along and says women should take upon herself two tefillot a day, and they are Shacharit and Mincha. And others, like the Rav Zichron Livracha, of the opinion that women should take upon herself three tefillot a day. So everyone does what they bubbas did, you know, and we'll all be happy. I didn't come here to become a decisive factor, just to put it on the table. But the reason that there is tashlumin makeup for tefillah, because in theory it's boundless. There's no time limitation, and that the Gemara really contrasts with Kriyat Shema. It does have a time factor. Having said that, and it's absolutely amazing that one of the great achronim, who's known as the Sha'agat Aryeh, his name was Rav Aryeh Leib something, he was a Rav in the town of Metz, he was a luminary 300 years ago, and his book, the Sefer, the Sha'agat Aryeh, is a litmus test of sharpness. If you wanted to say that somebody is a really sharp Talmid Chacham, what you say is, he knows, he's a baki, he's an expert in the Sha'agat Aryeh. That's the litmus test. And having said that, the Rav once told my brother that when he, the Rav, was 10 years old in the town Chasilovich in Belarus, where his father was the rabbi there, he was writing bar mitzvah drushes for his buddies who were 13 based on the Sha'agat Aryeh that he already completed. All right, so he was 10 years old at the time. Just get an idea. So when I used to interview boys in the 6th grade, going up to the 7th grade in Ner Tamid and Chashmonoim, one of my questions was, can you tell me something about the Sha'agat Aryeh? And they would look at me like, ma? I said, tazov, forget it. I asked them this question always, just to see if we have another Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik coming up the ranks. Maybe one kid's going to say, oh yeah, I finished it 3 years ago. But it didn't happen. It didn't happen, not one. But the best was when Aryeh Deri, I was going to say for the first time, when Aryeh Deri was thrown into jail in Kerala Masiyahu, so his chaverim opened up a tent outside the jail and they said he had made a yeshiva, a koil there, and they called it Koilel Sha'agat Aryeh. His name is Aryeh Deri. So I remember the next Shabbos in Shulim Ramot, some fellow saw the sefer Sha'agat Aryeh on the shelves and said, wow, they put out a sefer already.
They put out a sefer already.
So I think if the Sha'agat Aryeh would have known what they used his name for outside Kelam Maaseyahu, I think he would have been turning over in his grave several times over. Mamashkach. But the Sha'agat Aryeh raises the issue of perhaps the issue of Tashlumin can be, whether you can have a makeup for Kriyat Shema, yes or no, could be related to this whole question of the timing. Whether it's one mitzvah or two mitzvahs. Why? Because there was a suggestion that maybe Kriyat Shema is also boundless. There's no time framework. There is a time framework, and that is from the time that people go to sleep and time that people get up. Now, that doesn't mean that it's just the morning, just a defined time. Now, Chazal kicked in, and they did say there's an end zone for the time that people get up, at shalosha o, 3 relative hours from the morning. And but the night time, you can say Kriyat Shema technically the whole night. Even though Chachamim said, you should get it in before midnight. Fine. But the words, B'shoch Becha and B'vkumecha, do not suggest, as Beit Shammai thought, lying down and standing up. But they, Beit Hillel said, B'shoch Becha V'kumecha means time. And it says, "B'sha'ah she'anashim shochvim, b'sha'ah she'bnei adam shochvim, u'b'sha'ah she'bnei adam omdim." So, if not for the fact that Chazal then afterwards stuck on some qualifications here and said there are some end zones over here, and whether the end zone is a third of the night, half the night, or the whole night, or whether the end zone in the morning, whatever it may be, in theory, Kriyat Shema could be said the entire day. In theory, which means that the night connects to the day, the day connects to the night, the night connects to the day. So there really would be no moment where if you said Shema, you wouldn't get a mitzvah of on some level. So if that's the case, it's a mitzvah to say, Shalom Azman Grama. It's a timeless mitzvah which women should be obligated in Kriyat Shema. And this is now kicked around by the Achronim of the last 300-400 years. Is that conceivable when the Gemara itself says, puts Kriyat Shema squarely in the box of mitzvah taseh shazman grama, and the reason that women are encouraged to say Shema anyway when they daven in the morning is because Kriyat Shema serves a dual function. One, it's for the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. So according to all poskim, a woman can voluntarily fulfill the mitzvah anyway, so why not? Second, it's in preparation for Shemoneh Esrei, because in order to get into tefillah, you have to walk through the halls of Torah. And the Kriyat Shema serves that purpose of psukim of Torah. And women require that too when they daven Shemoneh Esrei. So of course women say Shema anyway. But the question is, the obligation to say Shema, is it there or not? So technically a woman is exempt because it's classic mitzvah taseh shazman grama. And the reason why that's so is because according to the Ramban, it's two independent mitzvot. So the mitzvah of reading Shema at night is a nighttime mitzvah, not a daytime mitzvah. And the mitzvah of reading Shema in the daytime is exclusively a daytime mitzvah. So it's time bound. It's each mitzvah is bound by time. But even according to the Ramban, who says that it's one mitzvah, nevertheless, we have to agree that the time framework are mutually exclusive. You can't read the Shema at 10 in the morning and 11 in the morning and say, hey, I fulfilled Shema twice. That's not going to work. Rambam begins, twice a day you read Shema. But it has to be one in the day and one at night. So it shows that there are time limits to this, and therefore, even according to the Rambam, mitzvah Kriyat Shema is an independent time framework, which means it's a mitzvah taseh hazman grama. Now, if you look at source number 6, you see something fascinating. The Gemara there talks about why women are obligated in making Kiddush Friday night, even though Friday night is classic time-bound mitzvah. Shabbos comes once a week, so it's time-bound. Mitzvah taseh hazman grama. And the mitzvah of Kiddush is the mitzvah of Zachorat Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. So we remember that in the second set of the Aseret HaDibrot, it reads Shamor Et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. So those of you who have been with me to Poland know that we go to the town of Lanzut, which is in Galicia, the shul of the Chayze from Lublin. So like many shuls, by the Aron Kodesh, you have Luchot, you know, something of the Aseret HaDibrot. And there, it's been reconstructed, renovated, but nevertheless, it's based on what really was, based on pictures and memory and so on. It's the only shul in the world that I've ever seen, whether when I was there or in pictures, where the Aseret HaDibrot, where it says Anoichi Hashem, Lo Yia, because they don't give you the whole text, they give you two words, and so on. So it says, usually it says Zohar Et, or just Zohar, whatever. Here it says Shamor Et. It has the Parshat Vetchanan version of Shabbat. It's like absolutely amazing. I mean, why would it, nobody has given me a satisfactory answer to why that was done. Certainly the Goyisha artist who may have been commissioned to do it didn't have a clue of what this was. So it was obviously Mechuvan, it was done intentionally. And my conjecture was, I don't have any basis to say what I'm saying, but it's as good as anything else, that the Chanukat Beit HaKnesset, when this Beit Knesset was inaugurated in the 17th century, it was on Shabbos Nachmu, on Shabbat Parshat Vetchanan, when we read Shamor Et Yom Shabbat L'Kadsho. I'm going to try to figure out if this is true, because nobody really knows the answer. But if anybody can come up with a better answer, what I think is not even bad. So it's like Rabbi Wein stories. They're true, or they could have been true, or they should have been true. That's all. Yeah, right? Or has anybody gotten hurt by this? You know? Share. I can market it as true, but I'm telling you honestly, I don't know. I don't know. But the Gemara does deal with the fact that there's a tradition. It's found in the Mechilta, the Medrash Halacha of Sefer Shemot, on Parshat Yitro. Zachor v'shamor b'dibur echad. Moshe Rabbeinu heard the two words simultaneously. And then, of course, the Kadosh Baruch Hu had explained to him what the Shamor was, what Zohar and Shamor together. And of course, in the Lechadodi, the Paitan uses this as well in the first stanza, except that he flips it. He goes, Shamor v'Zohar v'Dibur Echad. There are two reasons why he does that. One is he needs the shin for the acrostic of his name, Shlomo Alevi. So that's one, you know, because it's Shamor and Likrat Shabbat and Mikdash Melech, the Mem, and Hitnari, that's Shlomo, and then it's Halevi. That's classic medieval poetry. But the other reason is Kabbalistic. This is already heard a share from the Ravan, in the Zohar, but the Ramban quotes it in Parshat Yitro, that the Shabbat is divided into two halves. The nighttime is Shamor, and the daytime is Zohar. And then there's a Kabbalistic understanding what that means. But whatever it is, that the 24 hours of Shabbat, it's not identical, the night and the morning. You can split it. There's something different about the night than the morning. And because Shlomo Levi Al-Kabatz is writing from a Kabbalistic point of view, he adopts the Shamor v'Zachor v'Dibur Echad. He flips the Medrash. The Medrash is in chronological order of the Torah. Shemot before Dvarim. That makes sense. Zachor v'Shamor v'Dibur Echad. But the Paitan, the poet, flips it into the Kabbalistic order of how it works every Friday night. Shamor, and then the daytime is Zahor. But I'm just using this as an illustration where a day can be split into two. And this is what source number 6 says. Damar Rav Ada Bar Ava, Nashim Chayavot B'Kiddush Hayom Dvar Torah. Women are obligated in Kiddush Friday night, Midaraita, biblically. Damar Kra, as it says, Zahor V'Shamor, Kol Sheyeshna B'Shmira, Yeshna B'Zchira. Whoever is obligated in Shmirat Shabbat, which means being careful about the activities, the Melachot of Shabbat, which clearly women are involved, 100%, Yeshno B'Zchira, they also have the portion in Zachor. So if Zohar is the positive and Shamar is the negative, and if the women have the negative, and Zohar and Shamar was said simultaneously in one word, so everybody who's involved in the Shamar is involved in the Zohar. And that's how women are involved. Hanei Nashi, the women, Ho'il v'itnayu b'shmira, are involved in the Shmirat Shabbat, itnayu nami b'shmira, are also involved in the Shmirat Shabbat, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush. That's why women are obligated in Kiddush, which means a woman can say Kiddush and be mitzi a man, for his obligation. It's not. It's 100% legitimate. By the way, 100% legitimate. The with regard to Avdallah, though, machloket. That's a shir in itself. What happened to Avdallah? But with Kiddush Friday night, that's halacha psukah. There's no argument about this. But I use this as just a proof that you can take the day and split it into two. And having done that, let's go back to the Ramban. So the Ramban understands that there's a mitzvah of Shema in the morning and a mitzvah of Shema at night, and it's two different mitzvot. So here in the article of Rabbi Mital, he tries to kick around some ideas that maybe it has to do with the Maisa mitzvah. The act, the mitzvah act is one mitzvah act. And that's why the Rambam says, if it's the same mitzvah act in the morning as at night, how can you count it as two different mitzvot? It's almost like sitting in the sukkah day two and day three and day four. It's the identical mitzvah act. So you cannot count it as another mitzvah. And so too, the Rambam counts as one mitzvah the bringing of the Korban Tamid of the morning and the Korban Tamid in the afternoon. Where the Torah says, Etakeves echad taseh baboker veetakeves hasheni taseh ben arbayim. The identical Korban, which means it's the identical act. And not only the Korban Tamid, but also the Ktoret, the incense offerings that were offered. So baboker, baboker, it was done the same thing every time, the same thing. Morning and evening, and therefore the Rambam counts it all as one. Each one as one mitzvah, and in these two illustrations, the Ramban counts them as two mitzvot. So he counts the morning korban as one, and the afternoon korban as another mitzvah. The morning ketoret as one, the afternoon ketoret as another mitzvah. So there's got to be something happening here in terms of policy. Why the Rambam, you know, has it as one, and the Ramban has it as two. So. According to the Ramban, he says if the time frameworks are different and each one does not nullify the other, if for whatever reason in Beit HaMikdash they didn't bring the morning Korban, certainly they'd still bring the afternoon Korban given the opportunity, is an indication that it's an independent mitzvah. And because it's an independent time framework, this is the Ramban's thinking. Whereas the Rambam believes that what really unifies the mitzvot is the theme, the common theme of the mitzvah. It was the common theme of Kriyat Shema. It's Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, accepting upon ourselves the yoke of God, of heaven. And that's, whether you're talking about the morning one or the afternoon one, it's the same idea of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim. And so too, the Korban Tamid and Korban and morning and afternoon is the same idea, the Ketoret, the same idea. Once you have mitzvot that have the same idea, so it cannot be counted as independent mitzvot. So the questions that are asked about the Rambam is, one second, what does the Rambam do with tefillin? So he counts tefillin of the arm as one mitzvah, and tefillin of the Rosh as another mitzvah. But both are the same idea, the same parshiot, the same idea. So that's where Rav Mital starts digging into others who start suggesting, okay, what's different? Let's try to figure out, really, what's different about tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel Rosh? That the Rambam counts it as two mitzvot. And there is a view, the author of the Halachot Gedolot, taking us back to the 7th century, who counts tefillin, hand and head, as one mitzvah. So certainly you can count it as one mitzvah. It's a possibility, no doubt. So why doesn't the Rambam do it? Why doesn't he see it like Kriyat Shema, like Korban Tamid, and so on? Why didn't he count it as one mitzvah? So obviously the Rambam would say it's two different mitzvah acts. Because the act of putting on tefillin shel yad is one act. The act of putting on tefillin shel rosh is a different act. Once it's a different act, a different maaseh, so it's going to count already as two different mitzvot. There's a tshuva in the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, that if a person's arm is incapacitated, and that is from the shoulder down, because if it's just from the elbow down, even if it's amputated from the elbow down, it still has a mitzvah of tefillin shel yad, as long as you can still put it on the muscle. So you don't do the wines. The wines are less significant, but the tying of the tefillin shel yad on the arm near the shoulder, between the shoulder and the elbow, that's where the tefillin shel yad has to be. So again, if there's, let's say, a cast on a person's arm all the way up to the shoulder, so the person does not put on tefillin shel yad until they take off the cast. And if a person, you don't put on the other, you never put on the other hand. Never. Any rav that tells him, dog, you put on the other hand, that's wrong. The tefillin is decided at the bar mitzvah which hand the person is going to put on tefillin. So most people put on tefillin the left hand because it's defined as the weaker hand. And most people are righties. So that's why you put on the left hand. And those people who are exclusively lefties, so then you put on tefillin on the right hand. And those people who do things kacha, so there's a machloket between the Ramah and the Vilna Goin. The Ramah says, just take a look at how he writes. And that's all, that's a determining factor. You write with your left hand, so you put tefillin on the right hand. You write with your right hand, you put tefillin on the left hand. And the Groh, the Vilna Goin says, you look at mostly, you take a look at the various activities that a person does, and you get the feel of which hand is the stronger hand. And whichever is the stronger hand, you put the tefillin on the opposite hand. So I fell into that category when I was bar mitzvah. Because I do most of the things with like a righty, except I write with my left hand. And also I would hold a spoon or fork whenever I held the spoon or fork with my left hand. Although I'm quite capable of doing it with my right hand as well. A little bit ambidextrous with regard to holding the spoon or fork. But with regard to writing, I write with my left hand. Which means that according to the Ramah, I should put on tefillin on my right hand. And according to... this is my hand. Right? And according to the Gra, the Vilna Goin, I should nevertheless put on tefillin on my left hand. My stronger arm is clearly the right hand, you know, for playing sports and so on. Except for ping pong. Ping pong, I'm a lefty. But tennis, I'm a righty. You know, handball, paddleball, I'm a righty. Why? I figured it out. Anything that's precision is a left. And everything that's strength is right. I figured it out. That's what it is. Whatever demands precision, I do better with my left hand. Whatever requires more strength, I do with my right hand. So, but a year before my mitzvah, I started writing a little bit with my right hand to see, you know, and I can write semi-decently, better than most people with their left hand, that's for sure. I can sign my name, I can write a little bit with my right hand. And why did I do that? So excuse myself from the Ramah, because the Ramah is going to tell me afterwards, one second, and I'm a descendant from the Ramah, so you did like the Gra, because my father Hashem told me, you do like the Gra, and I'll put tefillin on my left hand, because that's the way, and that's why I did it. But I wanted to just be on the safe side, so I started writing a little bit with the right hand, and I started batting a little bit with my left hand. I became a little, you know, I had this, Mickey Mantle in my mind, you know, switch hitter. So I started swinging my left hand. And somehow or another, right hand hit fly balls, left hand line drives. That's the way it came out. But my brother, Zolzain Gesund and Stark, was very encouraging. He said, you stink both ways. Yes, very encouraging. Yeah, he was better than me in ball, for sure. He was better than me. That's for sure.
How about they use tzitzis as the criteria?
Oh, so Rav Mital brings tzitzis also. So in what regard? With regard to the tchelet. He says that the tchelet, tzitzis Rambam counts as one. And Ramban also counts just as one. And there, you might say, well, maybe there's a mitzvah of wearing tzitzis white and wearing tzitzis the tchelet. So there, because each one does not negate the other, although there's machloket on that, but that's the psak, the tchelet eina makevet at alavan, the levan eina makevet at tchelet. So, nevertheless, he has also a svara, you know. He brings up tzitzis too. You read the article, Jamie. I mean, you were at the shir. I don't know. You're hitting all the key points there. But that's really the thrust of what Rav Mital does here. He picks up on all these, you know, exceptions to the rule and tries to figure out, you know, what it is. But I'd like to suggest something that goes beyond the pure halakha constructs here. Of what Ramban really has in mind, of why it's two different mitzvot. And I think Chazal asked that question, of the more fundamental question, why twice a day? What's wrong with a declaration of our emunah once a day? Right? Remember there was a thing called one a day multiple vitamins, right? So why is a one a day kriyat shema, once a day, and shine, you know? Set shema yisrael, shema kenesh shemecha. That's a basic question. So, the Gemara says in Masech Brachot, Kol ha'omer emet, kol shelo omer, whoever does not say, a emet v'yatziv shacharit, emet ve'emuna aravit, lo yatza yedei chavato. Whoever doesn't finish Kriya Shema with the bracha, emet v'yatziv v'nachon v'kayam v'yashar, the bracha of Gal Yisrael, and emet ve'emuna, in the night time, by Ma'ariv, didn't fulfill his obligation, shenemar, as it says, la'agid baboker chazdecha, Ve'munatcha balelot. Something about praise in the daytime, expressing faith in the evening. What kind of obligation is this? Lagid baboker chazdecha v'emunatcha balelot. Where do you see that this pasuk in Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbat obligates us to do anything? And how is that fulfilled with, where do you ever see it as an obligation to say emet v'yatziv in the morning and emet v'emunah at night? That this should be an obligatory mitzvah on some level? But I think what Chazal were asking, well, why do we say Shema twice a day? That's what they were asking. And the answer is that there are, albeit the same text, but there are two reasons or two moments in life that a person better be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And day in and day out, we train ourselves for those extreme moments. For the moment of Boker and the moment of Laila. The moment of Boker is the moment that Baruch Hashem, all is well. All is well. Family's well. There's health. There's peace in the country. There's prosperity. And you fall into the trap that you did all this by yourself. Kochi va'otzem yadi asa li et achayel hazeh. I am successful because I did this and I did that, and I'm so smart and I'm so cunning and I'm so this and I'm so that. You better recognize that that bracha is all from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That there is an emet out there, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu can be visible. He can be perceived through all these great moments of goodness, that he's stable, he's yatziv, nachon, kayam, yashar, ne'eman, ahuv, nechmad, na'im. I mean, these are beautiful words of daytime. Lagid ba'boker chazdecha. But then there are moments of catastrophe, of mashber. Sitting in Auschwitz or Majdanek, Kadosh Baruch Hu, the emet of a Kadosh Baruch Hu wasn't exactly na'im or nechmad. The only thing left to hang on to is emunah. The only thing left. Emunatcha balelot. In the thickness of the nighttime, you can still perceive a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this was what the Gemara tells us about Rabbi Akiva when he's being taken out to be executed. Sheyatza nishmato be'echad. He says Shema Yisrael. This wasn't the Shema Yisrael of emet v'yatziv v'nachon v'kayam v'yashar v'neman v'ahu v'nechmad v'naim. It was a emet v'emunah. That's what it was. That's what's left. And not everybody stands up to that moment, to be able to say Shema Yisrael at that moment. Not able is capable. Shema Yisrael on a daily basis, morning and night, is a training exercise so that we know that when we are blessed with those great moments of Boker, we offer the Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's Shema Yisrael of morning. And God forbid, if we're tested with the most difficult moments, in the midst of the darkness of night, Kadosh Baruch Hu is also going to be with us. V'emunatcha b'leilot. Gam ki elech b'gei tzal mavet. Lo ira ra ki ata imadi. You're still going to be with me. And that's emunatcha b'leilot. These are two different ideas of saying Shema. And the Ramban felt that there would be worthwhile having it listed as two different mitzvot. Because they're there to promote two different feelings of the Jew at his extreme moment. What's interesting is that both moments of extreme emotion, a person does not want to endure them alone. In the 14th chapter of Hilchot Evel, the Laws of Mourning, the Rambam goes into the mitzvah of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. And there, he talks about, it's in the context, is because he's going to say a few words about Nichum Avelim. But he starts with Bikuch Olam, and then Nichum Avelim. But he gives a whole list of different activities that we call Gemilut Chesed, that are all under the category of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Just like you don't want to be alone at this moment, don't let somebody else be alone at this moment. And the interchange is fascinating. The Rambam oscillates like a ping pong match between Simcha and Evel. He starts talking about Levaker Cholim, ulesameach hatan v'kala, ulenichum avilim, and to make sure that the kala has all her whatever needs and gets back to evel, kvura. I mean, you can get a headache just reading this Rambam. Where are we? Where are we? And it's a flashback to the first chapter of Hilchot Evel, where the Rambam teaches us the halacha that sitting Shiva is an institution of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because according to the Rambam, Avelut is only one day biblically, but Moshe Rabbeinu made it into a seven-day affair. And the Rambam says in one breath, Moshe tikein lehem Yisrael, Shivat Yemei Avelut, v'Shivat Yemei Mishteh. The 7 days of Sheva Brachos. Hold on. Sheva Brachos he already talked about long time ago in Hilchot Ishut. Why does he have to stick it in right here in the laws of mourning? Because he wants to remind us that they go together. They go together. And he's going to define it more accurately later on in the 14th chapter of Hilchot Evel when he talks about the mitzvah of Yavta L'Reacha Kamocha. This is Lahagid Baboker Chasdecha Be'munatcha B'Leilot. That only obligates a Jew to seek out a Kadosh Baruch Hu at the extreme, but also obligates the Jew to seek out another Jew when he or she is going through the extreme. And this is really the whole sense of what Kriyat Shema is all about. And Am Yisrael understands to appreciate this very much so when it comes to the Chagim. Because a person feels the loss throughout the year. But when does a person really feel the loss? On Yom Tov. Somebody's missing at the Seder, somebody's missing in the Sukkah, right? That's when you feel the loss. It's not an accident that the Eastern European Jews incorporated Yisker on Shalosh Regalim, where a lot of people ask, how can you do something there? But in Beit HaMikdash, at the time of Aliyah LeRegel, so everybody went up from right to left on Har HaBayit, and the Avelim and the Chatanim, they walked the other way. And every time you passed them, you saw who was an Ovel, who was a Chatan, he gave a bracha. Mi sheshikain shmo babayit hazeh, the one who rests his name at this house, should be menachem. Should be menachem. You don't go through Simchat Yom Tov without a gesture of evel, of be menachem evel at this point. And who understood it better than the aton of Bilam? Bilam understood. The donkey of Bilam understood it. And look at source number 7. Vayiftach Hashem et pi aton, and the aton opens up its mouth. This is the Pi Aton, according to Chazal and Perkei Avot, was already created or programmed into existence from the sunset of the first Shabbat of creation. Erev Shabbat Ben Hashmashot. Vatomer leBilam, she says to Bilam, Ma'asiti lecha ki kitani zeh shalosh ragalim. Why did you hit me 3 times? 1 second. In the very same parsha, at the end of the parsha, Torah knows the phrase shalosh pa'amim. When Balak yells at Bilam, I hired you 3 times, you came out, you blessed them. She says, Shalosh Pamim. So why does the Aton of Bilam say Shalosh Regalim? So Rashi in source number 8 tells us, Ze Shalosh Regalim, Ramazlo, he indicated, Ata mevakesh lakor uma hachogeget Shalosh Regalim b'shana. You want to eradicate a nation that observes 3 Yom Tovim? Which means this is the definition of Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael in its prime, and it's at its best, can be seen on Shalosh Regalim, where there's the rendezvous between the sanctity of time and sanctity of place in the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel. Those are the moments that we recognize the extremes of a person's existence. And his great moment of simcha and his great moment of tragedy and sorrow at that moment. And that's why the Rambam tells us in source in Hilchot Yom Tov, he says, if you don't take care of those people who are in need, it's only gastronomical simcha, simchat kreso. If you want to know what simcha shal mitzvah is, you better invite people who don't have where to go for Yom Tov, just like in the Beit HaMikdash it was attended to. And the end is a comforting note, coming right after Shavuos HaBetamuz. Rambam tells us, Kol atzomot eilu atidim libatel b'nimot HaMashiach, all these fast days of Tisha B'Av, Shavuos HaBetamuz, Tzom Gedalia, and Asara B'Tevet are all going to be abandoned days of Yimot HaMashiach. V'lo od, not only that, el Hashem atidim liyot yamim tovim v'imei sason v'simcha, they're going to be great yamim tovim. As Zechariah says, Kol Ma Hashem Tzvot, Tzom HaRavi'i, the Tzom of Tammuz, Tzom HaChamishi, the Tzom of Av, Tzom HaShvi'i, the Tzom of Tishrei, which Tzom Gedalia, V'Tzom HaSiri, the Fast of Tevet, Yeh Levet Yehuda l'sason v'simcha ul'mo'odim tovim. You know when that's going to happen? Emet v'ashalom ehavu. If we can get the Emet and the Shalom to work together, then then it's going to happen. We're still working on it. We're still working on it. There's still a few more steps to go. But I think the Rambam here is saying two things. One is the abolition of the day as a fast day. And then the second thing is, on the ashes of the fast day will come a Yom Tov. Doesn't have to happen simultaneously. There could be an intermediary period where we're going to be able to say no longer a need to fast them. But for them to become Yamim Tovim, that's going to require some additional work. So I think we're leading slowly but surely, perhaps to that first level. Hopefully we'll be able to get eventually to that second level as well. Okay, I want to wish you a few weeks of Briyut, of good health. So we'll be back a little over a month. We'll see the announcement of Torah Tidbits when I come back. Okay?